Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
It's the religion question all over again. Should the private beliefs of candidates be subject to public debate? I'm Sarah Terry, sitting in for Warren Olney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Nearly half a century after John F. Kennedy tackled the religion question in his successful bid for the presidency, a candidate's religion is once again emerging as a significant campaign issue. Can Republican Mitt Romney make voters comfortable with the fact that he's a practicing Mormon? Are his private beliefs a fair target for pundits who claim that Mormon theology is strange? Also tonight, Kobe Bryant wants to get out of town. First, here's the news. I'm Sarah Terry, sitting in for Warren Olney. We're back with Which Way LA on KCRW. Today we'll be talking about Mitt Romney, a front-running Republican candidate for president and a practicing Mormon. Critics are taking a close look at the Mormon religion and questioning its doctrines. Should a candidate's private beliefs be used as a measure to determine performance in public office? Will Romney's religion be an obstacle as he tries to woo the Christian right? First, this story. Yesterday, he called the Lakers' front office a mess. Today, Kobe Bryant says he wants out. My guest is Vincent Bonsignore, assistant sports editor of the Daily News. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, big day in Los Angeles. Kobe says he wants out of L.A. What's happened here?
Well, I think we've gone past the point of no return, and I think Kobe was frustrated two weeks ago when the Lakers got ousted from the playoffs in the first round again, and I think that frustration has boiled over into deep anger for some things that have gone on recently in the Lakers front office, and I think he wants out of town. I think he wants to get traded, and I think it's past the point of no return. I think he does get traded.
What are the mechanics of a trade? He's got a 7-year, $134 million contract that's got something like $88 million left on it. What are the Lakers obliged to do in response to his declaration that he wants to go?
Well, it's actually, he's got, I think it's 4 more years left on that contract. He signed the contract 3 years ago, so 3 years have already passed. However, he can also opt out of that contract in 2 years. The way it works in the NBA, there's stipulations in your contract where you can opt out so that you could re-sign for even more money and more years. And he has that clause in it, and it triggers in 2 seasons. So technically, they don't have to trade him. He's under contract at least for the next 2 years, and they have, if they don't want to trade him, they don't have to trade him. But this is one of those situations where so much negativity has come out. So many harsh words have been spoken. It's just, you can't function that way. There's no way you can function. So I think the Lakers' hand is being forced, and they're going to have no other alternative other than to move him and hopefully get some good players in return.
He's not exactly a player he's an amazing player, obviously, but he hasn't exactly won the charm contest for his personality, from being a sort of a great team at times with Shaquille O'Neal to finally, to bickering so much with him that O'Neal, left, was traded in 2004. And some people say it was because of, the need to get away from Kobe Bryant. And now he's been sort of dropping bombs on the Laker front office. Is this just a guy who can't get along?
I think more to the point right now, I think he's just frustrated. He's going to be 30 years old. He sees the light at the end of the tunnel. He's played 11 years already, even though he's a relatively young player. It's 11 years, and that's a lot of wear and tear on your body. And I think he understands that he doesn't have much longer left at an elite level, the elite level that he's playing at. And he wants to win championships. So and it's not going to happen, with the teammates that he has. It's just not a good enough team to do that. So part of it is some frustration on his part, and he wants to go to a place where he'd have a better shot at cashing in on a championship or two before those elite years evaporate.
On that question of him wanting to be with a good team, Phil Jackson, his former coach, wrote in his book that Kobe was uncoachable. How desirable is Kobe going to be to other team managers?
There will be no shortage of suitors for him. Let's put it that way. However, the uncoachable part. I've always felt like Kobe was one of those type of people who, years ago, he wrote a script for his life, and that script was to be the greatest basketball player of all time, which is a noble goal to set for yourself. But I think when he wrote that script, he forgot to add other characters to it. And you don't get to where he wants to get without other people helping you. And I don't think he quite realized how other players, other people could help him along. He just was so single-minded that he forgot about that. And I think that's where his problems with other players, other teammates, coaches, front office people, I think that's where he ran into problems. I think he's improved in that area over the years, but I still don't think he's, like you said, the charm aspect. He's never quite gotten that part of it.
Just briefly, where do you think he will wind up, or who do you think will make the strongest bid to trade for him?
Well, the usual suspects, I think, will emerge. The bigger city teams like New York, which thrives on star quality, I think. Chicago might be a player. I think the bigger city teams that need that kind of dynamic personality would be the best bets to step up and try to make a deal with the Lakers.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for talking to us today.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Vincent Bonsignori is assistant sports editor for the Daily News. I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/whichwayLA. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
I'm Sarah Terry, back with Which Way LA. John F. Kennedy supposedly answered the religion question 47 years ago with his successful run for the presidency. But the religion question is coming up again, only this time the candidate isn't a Catholic, he's a Mormon. Mitt Romney is a frontrunner in the Republican field, and his religious beliefs are facing increasing examination. What role will religion play in the race? Can Romney overcome apprehensions about his religion? Will conservative Christian leaders endorse him? Is it fair to judge a politician's public performance on his personal beliefs, beliefs that are outside the cultural mainstream? My first guest is Dan Gilgoff, contributing editor at U.S. News and World Report, and author of the new book, The Jesus Machine, How James Dodson, Focus on the Family, and Evangelical America Are Winning the Culture War. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Part of our conversation today was about to begin with Mitt Romney as the conservative frontrunner, but there's news this morning that Senator Fred Thompson may also be throwing his hat in the ring. Let's talk a bit about where Mitt Romney stands in the race right now.
Sure. Well, it's important to point out that in national polls, Romney is still running a distant third among the presidential frontrunners on the Republican ticket. However, if you look at some of the recent polling out of Iowa and New Hampshire, he's doing much better. Those, of course, being the first primary states of 2008. A couple of weeks ago, the Des Moines Register poll actually showed him in first place, far ahead of both John McCain and Rudy Giuliani, who in national polls are ahead of them.
Okay, and why is Romney popular in these two states right now?
Well, I think that, you look at a state like Iowa, and this is what, this is the first caucus. It might be the most important primary caucus state of 2008. And it is also home to a lot of evangelical Christians, a lot of social conservatives who really comprise the base of the Republican Party. I mean, this is where in 1988, Pat Robertson, who went on to form the Christian Coalition, actually beat George H.W. Bush, who was running for president then, in the Iowa caucus. And that shows you the role that social conservatives play there. And social conservatives are very dubious of the front runners at this point, of both John McCain, who denounced the Christian right as agents of intolerance in his 2000 campaign, and also of Rudy Giuliani, who has said outright numerous times that he is basically a proud supporter of abortion rights. And that's why I think you see Romney in a state like that actually coming to the fore in recent weeks in polls.
How much of a role does Romney's Mormonism play, or do you think it will play as it comes increasingly into the conversation? There have been articles written about it. There have been very sharp comments made about it. Al Sharpton, who was rebuked by the NAACP for sort of indicating that Romney didn't truly believe in God, that Mormons don't believe in God. As these kinds of things come out into the media, as the television shows and films that are about to come out, what impact do you think that's going to have?
I think it might have the biggest impact of any factor on whether Romney could win or not win the nomination. And on one hand, the fact that he is a seriously religious person, has held positions of leadership in the Mormon Church, you know, was a Mormon missionary during his college years at Brigham Young. And in the Republican Party particularly, whose base is comprised of religious conservatives, being a religious person is important. And that's something that John McCain and Rudy Giuliani aren't talking a lot about, their personal faith lives, and probably won't talk a lot about. It also matters because Romney is the only one in the field of the Republican frontrunners to have been married to the same woman his whole life. And that matters to the Christian right, which also calls itself the pro-family movement. On the other hand, the constituency, the very constituency he needs, evangelical Christians, to win the Republican primary and who he's campaigning hardest among, are the ones who are most dubious of him because his Mormon faith is seen by many to be a cult. And so he's in this odd predicament of both having real assets with his religious life, you know, in terms of the Republican base, but it also possibly being his biggest stumbling block.
He spoke at a commencement ceremony at Pat Robertson's university not long ago. There are reports that he's meeting with the evangelical leaders. Can you tell us a little bit more about that background and whether endorsements from evangelical leaders will matter to voters in this kind of an instance?
They're going to matter big time. There is no candidate among Giuliani, McCain, and Romney who has been as zealous about reaching out to conservative evangelical leaders. I mean, Romney, as early as last October, sat down in his house in Massachusetts with such conservative leaders as Jerry Falwell, who as we all know, died a couple of weeks ago, Richard Land, who is the head of the public policy wing of the Southern Baptist Convention. And so the reason why those leaders are so important to Romney is that a lot of in-the-pews evangelicals will likely withhold support from a Mormon because of those serious theological differences unless some really prominent leaders kind of say it's okay to do that and lend their imprimatur to Romney's campaign. And Romney knows that, and that is why he is being so conscientious about reaching out to evangelical leaders, much more so than any of the other campaigns. I mean, he's miles ahead in that regard, but he also needs that support from Christian right leaders more than the other candidates do.
Okay, this is Dan. We're talking to Dan Gilgoff from U.S. News and World Report. I'd like to bring another journalist in now. Alex Beam is a columnist for the Boston Globe. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
Hi. Let's talk a little bit now about Romney the politician as a governor and the role that Mormonism played or didn't play during his tenure as governor of Massachusetts at a time when he was still he had not changed his positions on that he personally was pro-life, but he supported the rights of women to have abortion. That has since changed. Tell us a little bit more about him in Massachusetts.
Right. Well, I would say in Massachusetts, his Mormon religion played absolutely zero role whatsoever, with one small exception that I'll be happy to tell you about. But you know, he won election really on the basis of competence. He had an unmediagenic, not very inspiring Democratic opponent. He's whip smart. I mean, if Dan didn't get to saying that, I'm sure he meant to. I mean, Romney is obviously very articulate, whip smart. Sort of, yeah, ran on I can run this state, and frankly, he did run this state. I mean, I was trying to think where his religion did come into play. And actually, if you make a phone call over to Harvard University, you'll find a lot of really irate people who feel they were double-crossed by Romney about 3 years ago.
What happened?
This was back, I think I've got my facts straight here. California appropriated about $100 million to help its sort of infant stem cell efforts. And there was it was a tremendous competitiveness issue around the whole world. You know, there's a chain of stems in Prague, there's some in California, and Harvard has a huge and renowned stem cell initiative. And they thought, you know, that Romney was going to help them with this, because it's decided by the legislature whether you can engage in this kind of research. And they feel that Romney double-crossed them for political/religious reasons. As you probably know, what is called the Christian right generally opposes stem cell research, but to a secular scientific avant-garde institution like Harvard, I mean, it meant billions of dollars. Now, of course, they've sort of found a way to circumvent some of the strictures that Romney put on them.
So for the most part, as you've pointed out, Romney's, as governor of Massachusetts, was relying on his reputation as a good entrepreneur, a businessman, having turned around the Salt Lake City Olympics. You also wrote, though, last March, that you felt that Romney wouldn't win a national election because Americans would find his religious beliefs strange.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps it's a minority view, although it's one that I've held for a long time. And Mormon theology, again, which Dan just briefly alluded to, does have huge areas of conflict with the tens of millions of Americans, just for starters, who believe that the Bible is the revealed word of God. I mean, the Mormons have another book, the Book of Mormon, I guess, you know, revealed to Joseph Smith, that has a sacred place in their religion. And Massachusetts, everyone likes to make fun of us. I mean, we're a small, fairly well-educated state. I guess we're fairly tolerant. So we were happy to have him. I voted for Mitt Romney. I think America is a much, much more interesting country, you know, with broad currents and cross currents. And I'm skeptical that a Mormon will be our next president.
As a political writer, I'm curious in the question of his faith. Romney has held his answers very close to his chest. He tends not to go into the specifics of the Mormon faith. Do you think voters in general would be more likely or would be less apprehensive if they learned more about the Mormon faith?
No, the short answer to your question is no, but then I'll give you the long answer. I mean, I think the political press has it right, you know, this constant drumbeat, this insistence that he has to give, quote, the speech, which you almost alluded to at the beginning of the program. Of course, John Kennedy famously did give the speech, you know, where he said, I'm going to be your president, not the Vatican's president. In other words,
he said he'd resign if he was faced with a conflict in serving his church or serving his office. He'd leave office. I mean, he went head on.
Right. I think the one thing that the political commentariat has wrong is that I think Romney's very savvy. I think he will give this speech, but I think he'll give it when he thinks it's the correct time to give it. I think, you know, when he gives it, he will emphasize the ethical overlaps between Christianity and LDS, as actually Mormons prefer to be called. I mean, you know, the emphasis on the Golden Rule, on behaving correctly. I mean, I think he will take the 85% that's exactly the same, the strong belief in the values of Jesus Christ, et cetera, and he'd be crazy to start talking about the Garden of Eden in Independence, Missouri. He'd be crazy to start talking about Jesus Christ and the tribes of Israel, you know, hanging around the Mississippi River Valley.
You're raising some of the points that have been coming out in the media lately, and we've got our next guest is actually somebody who's written a biography on Joseph Smith and knows a good deal about Mormonism. And I'm going to lead into that, to our next guest, with this question. Several people have referred to the fact that, as you referred, LDS, the correct title of the church is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, hence the LDS. But a number of people, including Jacob Weisberg from Slate, have said, how can you take a politician seriously who believes that the Garden of Eden is in Independence, Missouri? In some of the research I was doing, or we were doing for the show, into some more of the tenets of the Mormon faith, what I found out was that Joseph Smith, the founder, had envisioned a city of Zion in the area of Independence, Missouri, which, theologically speaking, is quite a different concept. So, Alex, I want to give you... First, you should respond to that in terms of the Garden of Eden. Are we getting all the details right about Mormonism, or are we passing some of the sort of, you know, weirder ideas around?
No, yeah, I mean, no, you're getting the details right. You know, PBS did a pretty admirable four-part series on LDS, and they quoted Harold Bloom, the venerable Yale academic, who basically said, you know, if you're in for a dime, you're in for a dollar on Revelation. I mean, I'm a Christian. I'm a non-evangelical Christian, but I hold certain tenets of faith that I think a purely rational person would find totally ridiculous. I experience a spiritual something or other when I take Holy Communion. I mean, that's subject to, you know, that doesn't really pass a laugh test. So, no, your research is fine. And, of course, I mean, if you had a strongly devout Jew on the program, that man or woman might object to, you know, the Mormon's penchant for baptizing his or her grandparent after death, et cetera, et cetera. There are plenty of doctrinal issues that, I mean, indeed, you know, the Globe printed a campaign memo from Romney's own people that said others view the Mormon religion as, quote, weird, unquote.
Okay. Let's bring another guest into the conversation. Richard Bushman is a professor emeritus of history at Columbia University. He's the author of Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling, which is a biography about the founder of the LDS Church. Do we know enough about Mormonism?
Do we? You mean the American people?
Yes.
Well, as a Mormon, I'd say no, you need to know lots more. But the point is that every one of these individual beliefs can be singled out and seem strange and weird. But if you put it in a larger context, it begins to have a larger, a different meaning. And, of course, that's the way Mormons themselves experience it. So it's a difficult religion to approach in tiny pieces. I mean, just as Alex Beam was saying, there are parts of the Christian religion that seem strange if you sort of single them out. And critics of Christianity have done that many times. So it takes a long while to get the whole picture and put everything in context.
I'm curious, as a Mormon yourself, from what you know, from the conversations you're having with your fellow Mormons, how do you all feel about a candidacy by Mitt Romney?
Well, it's a mixed opinion among Mormons themselves. Everyone knows we're sort of in for a blast of comments that will be critical and embarrassing, and Mormons are very concerned about being respected by other people, perhaps overly so, simply because we are a little bit marginalized. But I think Mormons feel that, just like Catholics had to go through it with Kennedy, that on the other side it'll be better, that there'll be understanding. And I think the key thing is people have to see that someone who holds Mormon beliefs can be sensible and competent. As Alex Beam says, Romney speaks very well. He's smart. He's accomplished everything. And this apparent disconnect between his beliefs and his actual abilities sort of forces people to conclude, well, it's not so bad after all. And I think that's what will be the final result of the whole exposure of Mormonism during the campaign.
Within the Mormon community, are you all hoping that Mitt Romney will at some point just come out and lay out what it means to be a Mormon as opposed to being more private about it as he has been?
I don't think he'll ever lay out all that it means to be a Mormon. That's just too big a job for anyone to do. I think what he will stress is that his Mormonism is not going to lead to dictation of his policies from Salt Lake City. That is a very long tradition in Mormonism. It goes back 100 years. The church leaders have stated over and over again, more vociferously than Catholic leaders have, that what stands that a Mormon politician takes are his own. He's not obligated to follow church stands on any of these things. If Romney had come out for pro-choice, which the church is not, it's pro-life, there would not have been a whimper. Would have been accepted.
Okay. Let's bring another guest into the conversation. Richard Cizik is Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the National Association of Evangelicals. It's an umbrella organization of 51 denominations and 30 million members. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the conversation, I know. I'm curious what you can tell us about how the evangelical movement and the churches that you're affiliated with are considering a Mitt Romney candidacy.
Well, evangelicals are obviously interested in him, not just because of his religious beliefs, but because of his expertise as a public official and, frankly, how he would integrate both his faith and public policy, because evangelicals are fundamentally, Sarah, we are pietists. That is to say, we believe that faith and action, belief and action, are two sides of the same spiritual coin. So what one does believe religiously is important to evangelicals, and we happen to think it influences one's public policy as well. And so there's a conundrum here for both the voter, that is the evangelical particularly, but also for Romney himself as to how to navigate these things.
We've just heard, without trying to put words in Richard Bushman's mouth, that faith and action don't necessarily have to go hand in hand or aren't as tied as closely as you've just indicated evangelicals believe. What do they want to hear from Mitt Romney before they vote for him?
Now, that's a tough question. I think it will differ. There are those, for example, in our movement who can't be persuaded. I'm reminded of the comments of an insurance broker from Newport Beach, California, who said, "No way will I be voting for Mitt Romney," he said in a recent evangelical magazine. He said, "It's not prejudice." He said, "It bothers me a whole lot that someone bright, that bright, could fall for the stories about where Mormonism came from and all that blather he writes about the golden tablets." And this particular man said, "Look, I don't want him to be in the same room, that is Romney, at the table with Kim Jong-il of North Korea or Ahmadinejad from Iran." And so there are those who find his beliefs so objectionable, I suppose, that they are amongst those in the polls that say they will never vote for him. There are others who say, admit deep theological differences with Mitt Romney, but they're more influenced by his values and how they would play out in public office. And for those in the latter group, I think Mr. Romney has to somehow placate them. He has to somehow address their concerns in a way that's satisfactory. And I, with all due respect to Professor Bushman, I happen to think that historic Christianity is historical facts as well. It's not just an existential experience. For example, if it's real to me, it's therefore true. And Mitt Romney once was asked, for example, the Apostle Paul is famous for saying that if historical facts don't back up Christianity, then his teaching is futile. And the question then went to Mr. Romney, well, would you be willing to say the same thing if it were shown that Joseph Smith made things up? And Romney was quick to answer. He said, "I'm not going to take that hypothetical." Okay. So he doesn't want to answer those questions. And if he doesn't want to answer them, it's going to be hard to persuade the unpersuaded.
Okay, then I think that question has to go back to Richard Bushman, author of Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling, a biography about the founder of the LDS Church. What about it?
Well, there is a huge Mormon intelligentsia that has amassed a great deal of evidence in support of the Book of Mormon, just as evangelicals have amassed evidence in archaeological evidence, for example, in support of the Bible. But at the same time, there are lots of archaeologists who contest that kind of evidence for the Bible, and there are many who contest the evidence for the Book of Mormon. So it is a debate over all of these sort of religious rationalities, and that can never be escaped. But it is not irrational in the sense that there is no effort to bring reason to bear on these questions. And if people want to get down toe-to-toe, the battle could rage. But in the long run, Mormons don't like that kind of contention. I think they much prefer to sort of rely on the Holy Spirit to guide them. And that, in the long run, they feel is a better guide than all the rationalities in the world.
Okay. Alex Beam from the Boston Globe. We've just heard some of the differences between a Mormon point of view and perhaps what evangelical Christians are looking for or disagreeing about. What do you think the political ramifications would be for Mitt Romney if he did speak more openly about the kinds of things we've just been hearing from Richard Bushman?
Well, I apologize for not immediately catching the name of the representative of the evangelicals.
Richard Cizik from the National Association.
I don't know. Richard simply sounds incredibly direct and coherent, at least in that last exchange, and truth-telling. I love the way Professor Bushman sounds, and I have to say I have nothing but the highest regard for the Mormon religion, but I felt he took shelter in a certain relativism there. And without getting into too much detail, it's a lot, quote unquote, easier to prove or disprove things that were purported to have happened in 1826 than it is to prove or disprove things that were purported to have happened 2,100 years ago. I respectfully disagree with him. I know what he's saying. Well, the archaeologists say this, the archaeologists say that, but that's not quite what Richard was saying. The point is that, Romney will have to tell us more about Mormon, but, and I side with Professor Bushman. I'm empathetic. He says Romney really can't tell us everything. It's too large and too complex. I mean, he's right. I would just sort of add, nor would it be in his interest to tell us about LDS in excessive detail.
Okay. Let's pose that question also to Dan Gilgoff from U.S. News and World Report. Would it hurt Mitt Romney to be talking in greater detail about his Mormon tradition? And on the other hand, can he continue to ignore it by not speaking openly about it?
I think it's worth noting that despite all of these calls from many quarters, particularly from evangelical quarters and some of the high-profile evangelicals who have actually sat down with Romney, that he needs to engage in a dialogue like John F. Kennedy did in his 1960 campaign for the White House, that the Romney campaign has not only so far resisted doing that, and particularly on occasions that would seem particularly well-suited, for instance, his recent address, as you mentioned, to Pat Robertson School, Regent University in Virginia. And in talking to the Romney campaign, it's interesting that they continue to kind of hedge on that question and are keep pointing out that that type of speech might never come. And I think that they sense that in talking about, in providing some clarity on actual Mormon doctrine, beliefs, practice within temples, that it could do just as much harm as good in the eyes of evangelical Christians whose support they need to win the nomination and in the eyes of other Americans. I also think that they know it's different than Kennedy in confronting his Catholicism because, of course, there are tens of millions of American Catholics, or about 5 million Mormons in this country. And so the numbers are fundamentally different. There are so many differences from 1960. And a third one that I'll point out is the one that the Romney campaign frequently cites in discussions with me, is that the technology is such that this is something that Romney might continue to kind of hint at around the edges or questions he might parry about his Mormonism in a debate, but he's not going to stage a single address in this day and age with YouTube and with, online and how savvy the Romney campaign has been deploying that type of technology. So for a whole number of reasons, it seems from talking to the Romney campaign that kind of Kennedy-esque speech about his Mormonism is not coming.
I want to turn the tables on you for a minute. You're somebody who covers the campaign. If you were somebody who were advising the campaign, how would you tell them that Mitt Romney should have this conversation? What would you suggest?
Well, I think that to the extent that they can take a effective course, they might be doing that right now. And that is highlighting, it was interesting in watching the last presidential debate, how much Mitt Romney invoked the American family as the centerpiece, really, of the Republican Party and of American society. And I think that is a subtle but important play for the votes of the pro-family community who have these hang-ups about his faith. I also think that he knows, we're having this discussion kind of in a vacuum. The reality is that on the Republican frontrunner's ticket right now, the other two people that he's competing with, John McCain and Rudy Giuliani, are people that have their own kind of struggles in talking about their faith life, how their faith informs their public policy, and as Richard Cizik said, that's very important to many evangelicals. And they're also people who kind of have the mainstream of the Republican Party, the Republican centrist crowd, kind of covered. They're duking it out for the Republican establishment, whereas someone like Romney is trying to ride support more toward the right wing. And so I think that kind of changes the calculus a little bit as well.
Okay, let's go back to Richard Cizik from the National Association of Evangelicals. Let's talk a little bit about the fact that Fred Thompson, Senator Fred Thompson, is talking about entering the Republican primary race. Will he pose a substantial challenge to Mitt Romney in terms of his approval among the more conservative Christian elements of the Republican Party?
Sarah, my suspicion is that he would. In other words, that Thompson would pose a sincere threat to Romney's territory there on the right.
And because the religion issue is not on the table with Fred Thompson?
You don't have a religion issue on the table. And, well, there's one thing else. It's true. Fred Thompson hasn't been defined. But Romney has another problem. It's namely the perception among many of the evangelical conservatives that he's a Johnny-come-lately and not all that committed to core principles of the party. And so
you're referring to the abortion issue, I assume, where
you've also seen apparent shifts in Romney's positions on marriage, civil unions, adoption rights.
For gays.
And protected rights for homosexuals. So on these other issues, I think there's a hurdle as well for Mr. Romney.
And you have made the comment before that you think that religious Christians are fairly tolerant. Do you think they could wind up accepting him?
It's possible. Robert Putnam, for example, at Harvard says that evangelical Christians are the most engaged in civic-minded activities, everything from voting to attending protest demonstrations. And he also says that Americans are the most tolerant, religiously speaking, people in the world. That's because they have family members that are part of other faiths. And so that being the case, it's not impossible. It's a hurdle, of course. And I've only met Mr. Romney once. It was in passing at the Awakening. It's the Republican version of Renaissance Weekend down at Sea Island, Georgia. He's a likable person. And it's a hurdle to come over both the religion factor as well as the appearance of flip-flopping. But, look, he's a persuasive guy. Maybe he can do it. We'll see.
Okay, we're about out of time today. I'd like to give the last comment to Richard Bushman, Professor Emeritus of History at Columbia University and the author of Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling. What do you think, as a Mormon yourself and speaking from the Mormon community, and we've just heard all the sort of back and forth in the political discourse about this, what are you hoping for in the months ahead in terms of this political conversation?
Well, I hope that that certain issues will be removed from consideration. That is the fear that the church presidency is going to dictate policy. And that was the primary issue that John Kennedy had to cope with in his campaign. For Mitt Romney to prove the rationality of his beliefs, I think that's an impossible thing. That was not required of John Kennedy. He did not have to prove that he believed in communion or in the resurrection. And, of course, that's simply because it's more familiar and people understand it. And it may be something people want to hear, but it's really a tall order to make all of that evident in a political campaign. So I hope that that gets lightened up on a little bit.
Okay. Thanks so much. Thanks to all of our guests today. That was Richard Bushman, author of Joseph Smith, Rough Stone Rolling. We also heard from Alex Beam, a columnist for the Boston Globe. Dan Gilgoff is a contributing editor at U.S. News and World Report, and Richard Cizik is from the National Association of Evangelicals. Which Way L.A. was produced tonight by Katie Cooper, Karen Radziner, and Karina Miller. Our technical director is Mike Newport. I'm Sarah Terry, sitting in for Warren Olney. Join us again for Which Way L.A. on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way L.A. is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.